What's up, everyone, and welcome to the very first episode of Law Between the Lines, a podcast that teaches you your rights and explores landmark Supreme Court cases and their impact today. My name is Samana, and I'm going to be your host for this podcast. We're going to be taking a deep dive at some of the most important amendments in the Constitution and the court cases that follow them. In this podcast, we will explore the Bill of Rights, the Civil Rights Amendments, and many other amendments directly connected to elections and government officials. Today, we're going to be exploring two important clauses of the First Amendment, the Free Exercise Clause and the Establishment Clause. Let's jump right in. So, what exactly is the First Amendment? The Constitution states that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. So, what all of that means is basically the First Amendment gives you the right to free speech, prevents Congress from establishing a national religion or endorsing or supporting a specific religion, gives you the right to practice whatever religion you want without government interference, freedom of the press and of the media, the right to petition the government or to address a complaint through the courts or some other legal actions, and the right to protest and assemble. One of the two important clauses we're going to be looking at today is the Free Exercise Clause. And basically, that's the right provided in the First Amendment that gives you the right to practice whatever religion you would like to and hold on to your beliefs without persecution from the government. There was a landmark Supreme Court case known as Wisconsin v. Yoder, which was argued over this very issue. It's known as a landmark case because it actually set a precedent for many other cases with similar scenarios and also gave out more protections under the First Amendment. If you're wondering, hey, Samana, what the heck is a precedent? Well, essentially a precedent is a legal term that refers to a court decision that is considered as a standard for how similar or future cases with near or identical facts are decided. Precedents can be cited in court to refer to similar previous decisions and offer reasoning for a side of the argument. They also help construct stronger arguments in court and increase the weight of the evidence. So, Wisconsin v. Yoder. Let's get right back to it. Like I mentioned earlier, the government cannot infringe upon a citizen's right to exercise their religion. But when free exercise of religion interferes with governmental regulation, this gray area can become difficult to navigate, and that's where the interpretation from the judiciary comes in order to sort this out. Essentially, in this case, the Wisconsin Circuit Court convicted three members of the Old Amish Order because they violated the state law of sending children to school until the age of 16. Now, it's important to note that in the Amish community, after 8th grade, they provided an alternative vocational education to prepare them for life within the Amish society. And obviously, the rules within Amish society and the American society right now, they're very different, right? So a different education is warranted in order to prepare them for the life that they want to lead after they discontinue their education. So one 16-year-old girl, Freda Yoder, and two other members of her Amish community stopped attending school after 8th grade as part of her religion. Yoder claimed that religion and school are inseparable. Her parents, along with the parents of some other Amish children, were convicted for failing to have their children attend compulsory schooling until age 16 as per the state's laws. So, Yoder and her family appealed to the Wisconsin Supreme Court on the grounds of having their First Amendment rights violated. The state Supreme Court overturned the circuit court ruling, but the state of Wisconsin did not want to accept that judgment, so they applied to the Supreme Court of the United States asking them to review this case. Wow, here we have a really unique opportunity to view a situation where faith and the law are so deeply intertwined. What do you guys think? Do you guys think there is a definitive right and wrong to this situation? Well, the Supreme Court of the United States decided to hear the case. The First Amendment was actually the grounds on which the case was built, specifically the Free Exercise Clause. Yoder claimed that the state's requirement of attending school until age 16 and the convictions of her parents were a violation of her First Amendment rights. However, Wisconsin argued that their truancy law was non-discriminatory and wasn't specifically targeting the Amish community, and therefore it wasn't a violation of the First Amendment rights, and they also added that the law was created with the reasoning of helping students be successful in life beyond school, because on the off chance a student didn't necessarily want to be part of the Amish community their whole lives, they had the option with information from the public school education to prepare them for whatever life they do decide to choose. Let's take a closer look at the specifics for each side of the argument here. One of the main arguments for the Amish community was that an alternative vocational education would be provided following 8th grade to prepare children for life for adult roles within the Amish society after discontinuing the state-mandated schooling. The Amish community cited the case Pierce v. Society of Sisters. Similar case to this one in Wisconsin actually occurred in Oregon. Like I mentioned, precedents are really key to developing a strong argument. Oregon banned the attendance of private schools to eliminate religious schools, and it required parents or guardians to send children to local public schools between the ages of 8 and 16. The Society of Sisters, an order of nuns that provided Catholic schooling, sued the state of Oregon and argued that this law was a violation of the Free Exercise Clause of the First Amendment. The Supreme Court ruled that the Oregon law was unconstitutional under the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment, implicitly incorporating the right to religious liberty. If you don't know what the Due Process Clause is, essentially it says the government cannot deprive you of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. But we'll get more into specifics in some later episodes when we actually do explore the 14th Amendment, and even some criminal rights amendments like the 5th and 6th Amendment. Okay, right back to the task at hand. In the case of Pierce v. Society of Sisters, the Supreme Court ruled in favor of the Nun Association, Society of Sisters, saying that as long as private education would adequately prepare students for life beyond school, the state could not prevent religious parents or communities from educating students in private schools. So, Pierce v. Society of Sisters was actually vital to Yoder's argument because the Supreme Court established the principle of using an alternative form of education as long as it prepares the student for or the child for the path in life that they do decide to take. And as the Amish community was going to provide this alternative education to prepare children for adult roles within Amish society, by this precedent, by this standard that was established in Pierce v. Society of Sisters, this technically should be allowed. That's why the Amish community actually cited this case and used it to back up their argument. I think it's so cool how we can see how the idea of precedent works, because the facts of this case in Wisconsin, they're not completely identical, but the standard established here can be applied to this case as well. And that's why precedent can be so, it can strengthen an argument so much. So let's take a look at Wisconsin's argument. The state of Wisconsin, however, it argued that students need to attend school and receive a full education in order to be successful in society. They argued that on the chance that a child may not necessarily want to be part of the Amish community for the entirety of their lives, they required the skills provided in a public school education in order to be successful in American society as a whole. So they said that attending school, attending public school specifically, this education, is a compelling governmental interest that benefits the larger society. And I say that phrase, compelling governmental interest, in quotes, because it's part of a law. And that interest outweighs the claim that attending school negatively impacts the practice of the Amish religion. Additionally, Wisconsin argued that the mandatory school laws do not discriminate based upon religion and apply to everyone equally, which is why the First Amendment shouldn't be considered for this argument. So what Wisconsin is saying, that they didn't create this law specifically with the intention of affecting the Amish community. Like, they weren't like, okay, Amish community, you guys want to leave school after eighth grade, we're going to create this law to specifically prevent that because we don't accept your religion. No, that was literally not the case. It was just that they wanted every single child under the age of 16 to attend public school. So Wisconsin also cited precedent for their argument. So let's take a look at how these two cases compare. In the case of Prince v. Massachusetts, a woman named Sarah Prince decided to challenge her conviction under the Massachusetts child labor laws. And these labor laws prevented boys from under 12 years of age and girls from under the age of 18 from selling any publications and merchandise in public places. So Sarah, who was a member of Jehovah's Witnesses, was also the guardian to her niece, Betty Simmons. Betty sold religious publications for Jehovah's Witnesses while still under 18 years of age, per the Massachusetts law. So when the case was argued, the Supreme Court actually upheld the state law, siding with Massachusetts and prohibiting the distribution of religious literature in a public place by a minor, and used the reasoning of protecting child welfare to back up the decision. Now, if you remember, a little while ago, I mentioned how Wisconsin was arguing that taking the children out of the public schooling system before the age of 16, that would be like harming the children both mentally and physically. So Going along with Prince v. Massachusetts, they also argued that this law was in favor of protecting child welfare. So why is this case also a strong precedent for Wisconsin? It is really, really strong because although the crimes are on different charges, like how one is a violation of a child labor law and the other one is mandatory schooling, both were propelled and connected by the Free Exercise Clause. And in Princeton, Massachusetts, where a religious-related activity conflicted with the state law, it was the state law that was upheld. And since Wisconsin wants their state law to be upheld, and the religious-related activity, a.k.a. the Amish community choosing not to send their children to school after eighth grade, violated the state law, they cited this precedent so the law can be applied to this case as well. And that's why it works so strongly as a precedent. But ultimately, the Supreme Court, they decided to vote unanimously in favor of Yoder. They said that the family's religious beliefs were greater than that of the laws of the state to make children attend school beyond eighth grade. So what exactly does this mean for Americans today? Wisconsin v. Yoder established the precedent that parents or guardians can educate their children outside the public school or traditional private school system. So if you practice a different religion and have a religious education to pursue instead of public or private school, you can. And since homeschooling is also outside this realm, this ruling also may help make homeschooling possible. So if you're out there listening and you're homeschooled, Wisconsin v. Yoder made that possible for you today. Isn't that so cool? I honestly think it's so sick. Okay, so that was part one of the important clauses we're going to cover of the First Amendment in today's episode. But buckle up, because there's still part two, and we're going to be talking about the Establishment Clause, okay? So the Establishment Clause, essentially, it prohibits Congress from endorsing a certain religion or specific set of beliefs. So the purpose of this clause is actually to establish a boundary between church and state. So if you look at how many of the colonists arrived in America just in order to escape religious persecution, you can see how deeply rooted this clause is historically. Let's take a look at another Supreme Court case, Engle v. Vitale. In this case, one New York public school had school prayer recited right after the Pledge of Allegiance, and this prayer was approved by the state education board and was led by a teacher every morning, usually said aloud. The following prayer was said, "Almighty God, we acknowledge our dependence upon Thee, and we beg Thy blessings upon us, our parents, our teachers, and our country." In today's society, you're not required to stand or recite the Pledge of Allegiance, as that is a protected First Amendment right. And this prayer was also optional, and recitation wasn't mandatory. However, the government is not allowed to endorse or support or promote a religion. And since public schools are technically a government institution, it was argued by several community members, two Jewish families, and one member who was Stephen Engle. And he argued that the prayer was a violation of the Establishment Clause. Engle made the same argument that since public schools are technically a government institution, and the Constitution prevents the government from endorsing a specific religion, and he argued that with this prayer, the government was favoring monotheistic religions over other religions. Engle also argued that it was also a violation of the Free Exercise Clause, and as you may recall, that prevents Congress from prohibiting an American citizen from participating in religious activities. Congress is not supposed to have control over your religion. That's your religious freedom. So by having them recite the school prayer, Engle argued it's coercing them to participate in religious activities. Like I mentioned before, it was also typically a teacher who was leading the school prayer. So they argued that a teacher is a representation of the government. So the teacher is always going to be the government official. And since if it's a government official leading a school prayer, then that is, and you heard the prayer out loud earlier, that's technically the government forcing the promotion of monotheistic religions. Engle also cited precedent for this case, McCollum v. Board of Education. And in this case, an Illinois public school was actually giving religious instruction during school hours. And a block in the day was just dedicated to this religious instruction. So again, someone protested against this and the case went to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court of the United States ruled on an 8-1 decision that this required religious instruction in the Illinois public schools was a direct violation of the Establishment Clause because it technically showed the government preference over certain religions. Again, when you look at the strength of precedent, the similarity, the situations, the facts, and the method in which the law is upheld, all of that together makes for an extremely strong argument. And as Engle is arguing that the school prayer is technically a form of religious instruction, and the Illinois public school was found to be violating the Establishment Clause because of the religious instruction, this case worked extremely strongly for them in their favor. Now let's take a look at the arguments for Vitale, the respondents to the case regarding the New York public school. Vitali essentially argued that the prayer was both a representation and protection of the religious heritage of the United States. They argued that religion was evident in the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, and also said that Congress opens their sessions with a prayer, and that's not the government specifically endorsing the religion. The New York School's prayer was supposed to just recognize the religious heritage of the United States and wasn't intended to prefer one religion over the other. See, when you look at issues with private schools are technically owned by private businesses, or they have funding that comes from sources other than the government. The government doesn't really contribute a lot, like, financially to private schools, and a lot of that is, so a lot of their funding comes on their own, and they have a little bit more jurisdiction over what can be taught, and that's why things like religious schools and other things of that nature are allowed and they function in American society. However, since public schools are a direct institution of the government, it's really difficult to have them teach religious curriculum or do anything even related to religion, because the government is not allowed to endorse anything like religion related. Like, that is a very firm, solid interpretation of the First Amendment, and that has been upheld consistently throughout the Supreme Court. Your religious freedom is protected in a public school 100%. Not to say your religious freedom wouldn't be protected in a private school, it's just that they're allowed to support a religion and teach things like religious curriculum and all that. So when we talk about religion in public schools, those are that's the kind of rights that are protected by the First Amendment. Public schools cannot do, they have very, very limited jurisdiction towards religion. The court ruled in favor of Stephen Engel outlawing religious prayer in schools. So one more important thing to consider, along with the free exercise clause and the establishment clause, is also interest groups. So an interest group is essentially a group of people who share ideas and work together on how to influence public policy. And there's actually an interest group that's dedicated to protecting your First Amendment rights, and that's the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union. So if you check out the ACLU website, you can actually find a couple of ongoing First Amendment court cases there. And when it comes to protecting critical liberties, as mentioned in the First Amendment, or even in the Bill of Rights, or just influencing public policy as a whole, you'll find that prominent interest groups who have the resources to do so will play an influential role in even creating public policy. They'll actively assist in funding court cases, litigating, advocacy, and spreading awareness through public education programs. So let's talk about a more recent court case, actually that was funded by the ACLU, Fatiha v. Neal. This case was actually directly related to religion and recently settled. It involved a man, Raja E. Fatiha, who is an active member of the U.S. Army Reserve, who shot at the Savior Self-Survival and Tactical Gun Range in Oklahoma in order to maintain his proficiency in marksmanship. But in October 2015, after identifying himself as a Muslim, the gun range refused to service him. The range even had a sign declaring themselves Muslim-free. This growing anti-Muslim sentiment that has festered for more than a decade is a rising issue in America. Even as progressive as we claim to be in the 21st century, this discrimination is extremely prevalent and a clear violation of the First Amendment and the Civil Rights Act. So when this case actually went to the Supreme Court, it was declared a violation of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and also a violation of the anti-discriminatory law in Oklahoma. The courts protected freedom of religion, a key idea outlined in the First Amendment, and sided with Fatiha. The ACLU defends civil liberties of the Constitution, and it was them who assisted Fatiha with the resources to fight this battle. Oftentimes, in cases regarding discrimination, the issue of hate speech also comes forth, and this is something we will discuss more in depth next week on our next episode. The First Amendment grants free speech, which is the right to advocate for your beliefs or thoughts without retaliation or punishment from the government. As American citizens, this is actually one of our core values. Is hate speech protected under free speech, and what level of hate speech is considered unlawful? Some hate speech is protected, while others are not. All of these questions lack a definitive answer, and oftentimes with free speech, it's ruled on a case-by-case basis. This is exactly what we're going to delve into next week. I just want to say thank you so much for listening to my very first episode. I think as anyone living in this country, it's important to understand your rights and how they developed into what they are today. Also, I just think it's so cool the Supreme Court has such a sway in the standards of what is societally acceptable. They are so respected, their decisions are considered with the weight of a law passed by Congress. I also think this is, like, amazing because initially in the Constitution, the founders didn't actually intend for the Supreme Court to have as much power as it does today. But without its expansion over the years, it would have been difficult to maintain the rights we do have today. Who'd have thought homeschooling was made possible by the Supreme Court? It's important to understand these decisions and how they impact our lives today. Oftentimes, things like the federal government and the Supreme Court can feel extremely far away, almost like the impossibility of meeting, like, your favorite really big celebrity. And it may seem like it doesn't really impact your life, but I promise you that's not the case, and it influences it in little ways every single day. And with that, I'm going to conclude today's episode, and thank you so much for listening to me yap about the Supreme Court. I cannot wait to share next week's episode with you, and I hope you learned something new. If there's a specific case relating to any of the amendments that's currently ongoing or some questions you'd like answered, shoot me an email at lawbetweenthelinespodcast@gmail.com and I'll do my best to cover them in a later episode. Thank you all so much for listening. My name is Sumana and I'll see you all next week. Bye!